Today on Annenberg Radio News.
He's known for living in a very simple way, doing his own cooking, using public transportation, not having a driver.
We talk with Father James Heft about Pope Francis and what sets him apart as the new head of the Catholic Church. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 14th, 2013. I'm Rosalie Murphy, in for Omar Shamoot. Hopes that a professional football team will come to L.A. may be fading. Entertainment group AEG is no longer for sale. Billionaire Philip Anschutz says he will resume a more active role in managing the company, and CEO Tim Lewecki is leaving. AEG owns the Staples Center and the Los Angeles Kings, among other properties. It was put up for sale last year amid plans to build an NFL stadium. The stadium was the brainchild of Lewecki, leaving city officials to wonder whether the plan is now in jeopardy. Sports experts on Twitter suggest that the deal has been sacked. Demonstrators held a rally downtown today to protest a plan to close regional courthouses. The court says it has no other options as it tries to close its budget shortfall. The consolidation will reduce the number of courts hearing eviction cases from 26 to 5. Nicolette Collegian reports on the protests at the L.A. County Courthouse.
More than 100 people rallied in front of the steps of the Stanley Moss Courthouse carrying banners and signs.
They want to close Huntington Beach, Whittier, Pomona North, Malibu.
Legal aid groups are suing the LA County court system, saying the cuts will affect the poor, the old, and the disabled. Like other state agencies, the courts are facing cuts to close the budget deficit, but many people feel the cuts are unfair. Leonardo Vilches from the organization Union de Vecinos says the court closures could force people out of their homes.
This will be a tragedy for the very low income and for the senior citizens who are trying to protect their housing, because by not making it to the court, they will lose their housing and they will end up homeless.
Many of the people who face eviction have trouble getting to court. Barbara Schultz is an attorney with one of the law firms that filed the lawsuit.
Our low-income tenants who live in Whittier or Pico Rivera will have to be on a bus by 6 a.m. in order to reach the Long Beach courthouse by 8:30 court call.
Schultz adds that the closures could end up benefiting landlords,
particularly those with more disreputable landlords who will file dubious evictions, knowing that the likelihood of tenants being able to make it to a courthouse more than 30 miles away on multiple buses is iffy at best.
I called the Superior Court for comment. In response, the court sent me documents that say it will have no more financial reserves at the end of this fiscal year, and that the only way to balance its budget is to operate fewer courthouses and to change the caseloads of other courtrooms in order to cut back on staff. Nicolette Collegian, Annenberg Radio News.
L.A. city officials have reached a deal with two newspaper delivery women wounded by LAPD officers during the pursuit of fugitive ex-cop Christopher Dorner. The women were wounded last month when their truck was mistaken for Dorner's. They are going to receive money from the city to replace their bullet-ridden car. The deal comes after an attorney representing the women publicly complained Tuesday that they hadn't received a new truck, which was promised them weeks ago. California water officials released part of a plan to conserve water and protect endangered species. The $23 billion Bay Conservation Plan aims to restore and protect the ecosystem of the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, a water source for millions of Californians. One component of the plan is replacing the current pumping system with twin tunnels. Nancy Vogel is with the California Department of Water Resources.
We would build twin tunnels 35 miles long to carry the water under the delta, so we don't disrupt and destroy a lot of farmland in this, because we'd be going underground. And then the tunnels would take that water we divert directly to the pumping plants that already exist, and from there the pumping plants would put the water into the aqueducts and canals that send it hundreds of miles to Southern California and the Bay Area and the San Joaquin Valley.
The tunnels are also meant to protect an endangered species of fish in the Delta. But opponents of the plan say it's too expensive and could hurt other species living in and near the waterway. Catholics the world over are celebrating the new Pope's first day. He seems to be a popular choice throughout the world and closer to home in South LA, as reporter Katie Lyons found out.
Pope Francis has already managed to break with tradition.
He refused to elevate himself higher than the other cardinals during his address, and he asked for the crowd's blessings. His unconventional ways resonates with Bobby Gooden. She attends the Holy Cross Church on Main Street in South Los Angeles.
In his address, he did something that I don't remember seeing before. He asked the people to pray for him before he blessed them. So that kind of shows us that he feels that our prayers is just as powerful as his are.
Gooden is also impressed that the Pope is a Jesuit. Jesuits form the largest single religious order in the Catholic Church. Yet, there has never been a Jesuit pope.
The first pope to be from the Americas, that's impressive. But the first Jesuit, to me, is more impressive. Because the Jesuits are pretty independent, you know what I mean? And they're totally in for education. So the fact that he's a Jesuit is probably more impressive to me.
The new pope's Argentinian roots are what impress Adriana Guerra from St. Vincent Catholic Church.
It's the first time, you know, to have a pope from Latin America. That's a wonderful thing that's happening, the whole story. So that's why, you know, I'm glad to have, you know, Latino, mm-hmm. you know, from this side. So I think it's better. I think it's going to change a lot of things.
Pope Francis was born in Buenos Aires to Italian immigrants. He leads a simple lifestyle. When serving as archbishop in Argentina, he chose to live in an apartment rather than the archbishop's palace. He even took the bus to work and cooked his own meals. The 76-year-old is well known for his work with the poor and his strong opposition to gay marriage. Gooden thinks his humility will be good for the church.
From what I'm hearing, I think he's a very holy man. I think it's going to be a good change. He seems like he was very affable and friendly. And
with nearly 480 million Catholics in Latin America, experts believe that by choosing Bergoglio, cardinals are hinting at where the future of the church may lie. Katie Lyons, Annenberg Radio News.
One of the cardinals who helped choose the new pope was Roger Mahoney, former head of the Los Angeles Archdiocese. As Mahoney was taking part in the conclave, it was announced that the archdiocese has settled 4 sexual abuse cases for $10 million. Today, lawyers and victims talked about the case, the settlement, and Cardinal Mahoney, who they accuse of covering up abuse by former priest Michael Baker. Sarah Politis reports.
Michael Duran was around 11 years old the first time he says he was molested by former priest Michael Baker. But today, Duran says he feels some vindication.
I did nothing wrong. And I'm finally putting the shame back on my abuser and the church that protected him.
Despite the settlement, Duran's attorney, John Manley, believes there is still justice to be served. In 1986, Manley says Baker went to Cardinal Mahoney and told him that he had abused children.
And basically what the cardinal did until 2000 is hide him and deceive those he was assigned to protect.
Michael Baker eventually went to prison. But the cardinal who kept the secret and protected Baker was never punished.
Not a day in jail, not a search warrant, not even been asked to testify in front of a grand jury.
Manley believes the grand jury in L.A. needs to reconvene to investigate the cardinal's role in the case and how law enforcement failed to catch this problem sooner.
If that does not occur, this will happen again. There is a cancer in this archdiocese. There is a cancer in this institution, and it needs to be cut out.
This week, Cardinal Mahoney was in Rome to help elect the new pope. Manley hopes that when the cardinal returns, he will be greeted by a new investigation. But in the meantime, he offered some suggestions for Pope Francis on how to stop this issue.
Any bishop who's covered up for a pedophile priest, remove him, laicize him, and send the message to bishops. If you cover up for a pedophile priest, if you protect him, if you hide him, if you move him, we're going to take you out, and you're not going to be a priest anymore. And we're going to turn your name over to the police. I tell you, if that happens, and it won't, but if it does, this will stop.
And while Duran says he no longer practices Catholicism because this incident shattered his faith, he also has some advice.
I think he needs to restore the faith of the millions of believers that are still following the church. And I just hope those believers hold him accountable.
Before today's news conference, the Archdiocese of L.A. issued a statement apologizing to the victims. They apologized for their mistakes in handling the case and took responsibility for the harm inflicted on the victims. Sarah Politis, Annenberg Radio News.
St. Patrick's Day weekend should be a beautiful one. Tonight will be a little overcast with a low of 55. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 76 and a low of 55. Saturday and Sunday should look similar, and there's a 0% chance of rain all weekend. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we take a look at how one restaurant is saying no to mobile distractions. Students at Repetto School in Monterey Park learned about a crucial part of disaster relief this morning, how to help their four-legged friends. Reporter Lauren Jones has the story.
It's often forgotten that an entire segment of the population is impacted by natural disasters. Over 70,000 animals have been rescued in times of natural disaster by organizations like the American Humane Association. The association brought its 82-foot-long rescue rig to Repetto School in Monterey Park. The rig features a mobile vet hospital, flood boats, and can even house up to 16 volunteers. Students at the school were able to get a private tour of the big rig that just returned from Hurricane Sandy.
We are becoming a more humane society in a lot of different ways.
That's Ira Brill, Director of Program Communication for Foster Farm, which co-sponsored the event.
And if we can, you know, help our young people to understand that, then they're going to grow up to be, I think, better students, better citizens.
Brill says the association is creating programs and services to inform children about animal welfare. Haley Nzunza is a sixth grader at Repetto Middle School. She was surprised at all of the services the American Humane Association provides.
I thought it was really neat how they have all the search and rescue gear, and I never knew how much they took care of, like, the chickens and all the animals.
That's exactly the thinking Robin Ganser, the president and CEO of the American Humane Association, wants to hear. She says programs like these aim to create the next generation of animal rescuers.
American Humane Association is this country's first national humane organization. We've been in every single major natural disaster.
Where's the chicken?
Kids have been just over the moon.
Even though they were disappointed they didn't get to see chickens, the children were sporting their junior animal rescue badges as they walked back to class. Lauren Jones, Annenberg Radio News.
Hands out, hands out.
5 minutes from the campus of what some call the University of Spoiled Children is a house filled with people who denounce materialism and preach understanding and acceptance. Faith Miller visited the Technicolor Tree Tribe house and looked into the lives of these self-proclaimed modern-day hippies.
Oh, a bean?
A bean?
Oh, I thought you said a bean cookie.
A vegan cookie.
Oh, they both sound great, though.
Vegans, vegetarians, feminists, dumpster divers, environmentalists, and political activists, they all call the Technicolor Tree Tribe house home. I visited the place, and they took me on a tour.
Actually, come with us.
Yeah.
This is our map of the jackpot dumpsters in Los Angeles.
The group takes bags of bread and cartons of eggs from grocery store dumpsters and swears they're fine to eat. The walls of the house are littered with stuff like that map.
Great.
Posters all around just describing kind of how we feel as a house for safe spaces, you know, not to eat the wrong mushrooms.
The eclectic look and feel of the place makes you wonder what these people have in common and how they found each other.
It's actually like a kind of history of the co-op in this hallway. It started out as a group of like labor activists who decided that they were like done with this and wanted to live together.
USC sophomore Francesca Bessie found her way into the tribe after coming to California from Catholic boarding school in Canada.
And it was like extremely cloistered, really, really intense, and a lot of like religious doctrine, and a lot of people who were very, very different from me ideologically.
So was joining the tree tribe just a reaction?
Reaction? I wouldn't say reaction, because I feel like reaction makes it sound like I'm just doing it because I want to, like, go against the grain, and it's definitely not.
But what exactly do they do in the house? After all, Francesca's Facebook page seems pretty standard. She says to make it simple for people, she calls herself a modern-day hippie. But what does that mean?
I do live with a bunch of people and, like, share clothes with them and, like, recycle things and get food out of dumpsters, eat chicken eggs from my backyard, and I also am a raging feminist.
But given the chance, she'd describe herself differently.
A person trying to live as uninhibited as possible.
And what about the people who fund this inhibitions-free lifestyle? What do her parents think?
I mean, my parents are totally like, oh, you've been, like, Californianized, you're a flower child, you're a hippie.
Their hands-off approach doesn't bother Bessie. She says she's found a new home with the Tree Tribe.
This is, like, home.
It's one cooperative, just mess of things. Kind of represents just how the co-op is.
The whole house is a bit of a mess of things. But the collective shares more than opinions and old clothes. And Bessie said for that, she plans to spend her next 2 years at USC in the Tree Tribe. Faith Miller, Annenberg Radio News.
Newly installed Pope Francis is already being hailed as a servant of the people. In his first public appearance in St. Peter's Square yesterday, he asked those present to pray for him as he starts his papacy. That action was praised as a mark of humility. I spoke this morning with Father James Heft, founder of the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies at USC.
He bridges two cultures. His roots are Italian. His mother and father were obviously Italian, but he grew up in Argentina. He's perfectly bilingual, but he knows more than just two languages. He also brings together the southern and northern hemispheres. That's impressive. He's the first one to mention the name Francis. And you might ask, well, what's in a name? Well, quite a bit. And for him to call, as a Jesuit, to name himself after Francis of Assisi, it's rather extraordinary.
He's the first man to take a new name, a fresh name, since Lando I in 913 A.D. What kind of ethos does Francis of Assisi bring to this papacy?
Several things suggest themselves. The great emphasis on poverty. He's known for living in a very simple way. And he really dislikes what you might call, showiness and vanity. The second one, I don't know if you remember the story of Francis, but God spoke to him and said, I want you to rebuild my church. And Francis first interpreted this as rebuilding a broken down building. And eventually he understood, no, it's not this building. It's the people of God. It's a renewal of the whole church. And this might be part of this man's vision. And there are two other things, too, that might be involved. Francis of Assisi has this great reputation well beyond Catholicism. Everybody loves Francis. A love for the earth might be there. And then finally, the story of Francis, who, unarmed at a time when there was only battles between Muslims and Christians, went to visit the Sultan. And without any violence, talked with him. The Sultan was very impressed and sent him back with guards to return to the Christian side. So who knows? There may be something here going on with even the dialogue with Islam, a great religion that has the same number of followers as does Christianity and Catholicism.
What kind of reactions have you been hearing from your peers, from other members of the clergy, other theologians?
One that's obvious is that he was on no media's list of front runners. The second is somebody made the comment that, there's something to be said for a way of electing your leader that can take place within 3 days at a minimal cost when you compare it to the two-year-long presidential campaign in the United States. And while people could question how democratic it was, nonetheless, it seems to be functioning for about 2,000 years.
Just because you did draw a political comparison there, I wonder, to what extent is this office political, and to what extent can we discuss it politically without losing sight of its religious significance?
I think you can talk about the papacy, the structure of the church, in sociological and even political terms. That's not the problem. The problem would be that if you talked about them only in those terms, it's more than that.
That was Father James Heft of USC's Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies. Imagine sitting down at a restaurant and not seeing people with their eyes glued to their phones. Not a single person texting, tweeting, or even calling.
That's a world one restaurant owner is hoping to bring to life. Here's Emily Mattu to tell us how.
We've all been there. You sit down to a nice meal in a restaurant, smile at your date across the table, and then it happens. We all know these sounds and could probably respond to them in our sleep. Phone calls, texts, emails, it's never ending. Most people probably think they need a cell phone in order to have a social life. At a Los Angeles restaurant called Eva, disruptive cell phones aren't a problem anymore because Chef Mark Gold has put his foot and your phone down.
This is like an extension of my family, and so this is my home.
And because Eva prides itself in being like home, that means no phones at the table. Gold has taken this idea even further by offering customers a 5% discount for turning their phones in at the door.
So many times I'd come out into the dining room and there'd be like a couple sitting there and they wouldn't be talking. They'd be on their phones texting and stuff like that. You know, when people are not distracted by the phone, they really actually enjoy each other. Some, and some don't, you know.
Eva has received a lot of positive feedback on this idea. And one Yelp reviewer states, "I loved this restaurant and especially the idea of turning in your phone. So useful for those who feel the need to tape your date's smartphone to your forehead to get them to talk to you during dinner." And it's not just adults. Even college students are taking a stance. USC sophomore Neil Ghosh and his friends have found a creative way to keep their hands off their phones.
You put all your cell phones in the middle of the table, and whoever looks at their phone first has to pay for the meal, like for everybody. So with that motivation of not losing a lot of money, people really kind of enjoy it, and you're almost like forced, which is horrible now that it's forced, to like actually socially engage with people.
Ghosh and Gold both have the same intention. They want people to connect again, which is what Gold does with his wife and two young children over meals every day.
Yeah, I mean, we sit down, we don't turn on the television, we have no phones at the table, we sit down and we have a dinner.
The no phones discount has gotten national publicity. That's because Gold was the first to offer an incentive like this. He says that more diners are turning in their phones than ever.
So we want to bring you back into the moment, you know, with your significant other, your family, or whoever you're with, your wife, girlfriend, whatever.
But ultimately, it's about whether or not the idea of putting your phone down to live in the moment catches on. Mark and Neil both shared their final thoughts with me on the issue.
Every day, the phone doesn't stop, you know. It's like, take 10 minutes and just enjoy, you know, the company, you know.
There's still hope for humanity in terms of not being so plugged in to stuff.
Well, hope until the next text or phone call comes through and you just have to check it. Emily Mattu, Annenberg Radio News.
And fans of the TV series Veronica Mars are celebrating today. Fans met a fundraising goal on the crowdsourced fundraising website Kickstarter to make the show into a low-budget movie. The series is about a private investigator in a fictional small town in California. Its creator had hoped to raise $2 million, but as of this morning, fans had donated more than $2.5 million. Filming is expected to begin this summer. Now we check in with Eric Burst to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Hey there. Campus is almost empty. It's spring break time here at USC. We're speaking to DPS Captain David Carlisle tonight on tips on staying safe during spring break. And breast cancer and radiation are back in the headlines today. A new study says that heart complications could be possible later on down the road after treatment. And goodbye, Kobe, at least for a few games. Our sports team is talking to students here on campus about their reaction to Kobe being hurt last night. Check us out at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Eric. And if you're a mathematician or you simply love a good homemade apple pie, you're probably celebrating Pi Day. March 14th is celebrated for its resemblance to the mathematical pi, 3.14. The holiday gives us all an excuse to grab a pastry dish and eat up. But really, who needs an excuse? That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Olivia Nyland and Sam Weiser. Molly Gray is our producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Rosalie Murphy.